This is the life, jivan, anandam buddhi vardhanam, vidya vadu jivanam, knowledge, tender, sweet, charming bride, vadu, brajavadu jivanam. Life, a tender, charming, sweet, newly married woman gives life to her husband. Material inspiration, prerna. Is that right? Prerna. No, you should pray, not prayer. Not prayer, prayer, no. Vandanam, no. Prayer, yes. Prayer, na. Inspiration. Vidya vadu jivanam. You've heard of this phrase? Cheto darpanam marjanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam. Shreya kaivra vichandra kavicharanam vidya vadu jivanam. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. Pratipadam purnamritas swadhanam. So, swadhanam, drinkanam, drunkanam. These are the three limbs of bhakti. Swadhanam, drinkanam, drunkanam. Because if you drink enough harikatamritam tapta jivanam, then this is swadhanam, tasting, swad, and then drinkanam, drinking by your ears, then you'll become drunkanam. You become unmat, not mada, kamkrod lo moha mada, not mada, intoxicated, crazy, stupid, deranged. Unmata, uttama mud, topmost crazy person. You will dance in ecstasy, abandon all your upadis, and dance in the street like a wild man. Hari bol. Nitai gor, hari bol. Singa Chaitanya Unmat. He was like a maddened lion running down the street with coal and kartal, chanting Harinam. Unstoppable force. The British defined the Jagannath as juggernaut. 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 Look up in your dictionary. JUGGERNAUT, juggernaut, which means Lord of the Universe, means Jagannath. Samaste, Jagat, Amaya Jagat, Devi Dham. We're in it. You like it, Devi Alingata? You like to put your arms around Maya Devi. This is Devi Dham. And Devi Dham is the kingdom of Durga Devi. Durga means she's a difficult lady to go around with. Durga, difficult. And she takes you for a long ride. Dur means bot durhe. Janam Ritu, Samsara Chakra. That's Dur. Gati means destination, moving, going. Gati kya hai? Kahan gaya? Ask her. She's driving. Durga's driving. Durgati. So this is Devi Dham. Durga Devi. Ma. Oh, ma. Kripakaro. So she's a very difficult girl to embrace. And she takes you for a long, bumpy ride. So her name is Durga. Difficult. You can't embrace Durga. She's telling you, my name is Durga. Why are you trying to embrace me? Durga. Dura means difficult. If you do, you'll get in trouble. Devi Dham, no. Then there's Hari Dham. Then there's Vaikuntha Dham. There's Braja Dham. Leela Bhumi. Prem Bhumi. So, life. Vidyavadu Jivana. How is it Kirtana's life? Kirtana's life, because it gives life to what? Does Kirtan animate the body? Does it animate and innervate and motivate and move the mental quantum, the mind, brain, intellect? No, these are all mundane, lokic, jada prakriti, material stuff. Maya, jagat, vumira po nalo vayu. So many molecules, chemicals, protein, hydrogen, nitrogen, oxygen, sulfur, systems, endocrine system, digestive system, respiratory system, urinary system, reproductive system, systems management. Manage the system. It's all materials. But that's dead. That's matter is dead. There's no jivanam there. So any knowledge related to dead is not vidya jivanam. It's avidya maranam. Technology school of technology. Everywhere on the Delhi Agra Highway. Technology school. Management technology, management technology, management technology. Everyone's management and technology. But no one knows who they are, and no one can manage their way out of this world. No matter how much technology you put under your brain, inside your head, with all that technology, you can't manage your way out of the material world. So a good, a thousand, I was seeing what a cheating process. I'm coming on the highway from Braja Dham. And then Sanjay's School of Management, and this one, and that one, and this one, that one. Science and technology. Technology, technology, management, management. And they're all cheating. They're just, all these institutions are opened up just to make money on hope. They're making money on hope. It's a cheating process. There's 1.5 billion people, and so many young people are cracking their heads and wasting their lives in management and technology schools. And when they get out of school, there will be no jobs at all. Because all the technology, there's already a bunch of guys that graduated 10 years before them, and they've used their brains and created technology to put people out of business. So there's no, you are going to be a computer scientist with your technology, but the guys that graduated 5 years before, they made the technology, so you don't need computer scientists anymore. It's done by some program. So it's a very nice cheating process. If you go to school, if you actually ask them, what are the chances that I will get a job? I go to your school of business management in your technology school, and I go there only with a heavy investment of time, labor, sweat, and money, and hope. What is that hope? That I will get a job when I get out of school. But no one tells you, when you get out of job, there will be 10,000 applicants trying to get one job. And that is the fact. And if people thought about the odds of landing a job, if they had half a brain, they'd think this is a losing proposition. Because I'll spend so many years in schools of business management and technology, and I'll get out and I'll walk around my degree between my teeth and say, please, sir, give me a job. And there'll be no jobs. One out of 10,000 will get a job. But no one realizes that when they're going to school. A man in India considers himself ati-ati-sobhagya if he gets a job for any damn amount of wages. 7,000 a month or a week or whatever it is, ridiculous wage. And it's all cheating process. The only people making money are the guys that set up the schools of management. Thousands of young people coming off the farms and villages with hope that I'll improve myself. Sell the family estate, sell all the biggest, get some land, live, enjoy for a few years, and then nothing. This country is going to be a big mess in about 10 years. There'll be thousands and millions of unemployed people wandering everywhere. It's ridiculous. This passion for management and technology. Isn't it? Anyone ever think about it? These are hard facts. Because you open the page of the newspaper and see how many people are applying for one job. Have you ever seen? You ever try to look for a job? It's all hope. It's all, you know. As I came from Vrindavan to thousands of schools, I said, they're going to graduate every year 20,000 technology robots and 20,000 management system robots, and these robots are going to march into Delhi and say, we want a job, and say, sorry, you're 60,000, the jobs are two. And you go back to the village and say, well, I work on the land. But there is no land because your parents sold it all and they live in a retirement house somewhere. And you're like, well, now what? Well, I've become a badmash. I've become a gunda. And rob the people that have a job. Go to the people that have a job and rob some money from them. So it's like school of technology and systems management is just creating a bunch of gundas, future gundas. You really want to write an interesting essay, write an essay on what are the chances of an Indian graduate getting a job? Krishna Chaitanya. And I'm sure you'll have some very sad findings. The statistics and the percentage of how many that graduate will ever get a job. Am I right? Anyway, it's obvious something is out of proportion here. Anyway, our basic plan is to somehow survive in this world by the grace of God, by some endeavor in some way or another that's legitimate, and spend the balance of our time worshiping God, and maybe qualifying ourselves to enter the university of love in the spiritual world. And there seems to be lots of employment up there, and lots of room for new recruits. And as many people go there, there's always room for more, because it's Ananta Dham. It's made of Chit Dham, Vaikuntha. It's not made of limitation. It's not made of duality. And Devi Dham, the material world, this Maya Jagat, it's made of locality and limitation and finitude. There's finitude and infinity. There's this microcosm and the macrocosm. So the material world is limited and it's defined and confined within the concentric shells that envelop this, encase, encapsulate this universal egg, Jagananda. Anda means egg. Jagat, it's shaped like an elliptical shape. Even the scientists say that's the shape of the universe. But beyond Vaikuntha, transcendental world, Chittam, La Prakriti Dham, it is made of different matter. It is made of Chintamani. It is Ananta Dham. It is unlimited. Because we have space here, and we have calm and vayu and bhumi, earth and water, elements, and they're limited. They have their space. They're all adjusted in space. But there's not space. There's consciousness. Mindscape, consciousness. We have landscape and skyscape. But there they have consciousness scape. Like how, what is the limits of your mind? What is the boundary of your mind? What is the limit of your mind? How far can you go? Can you reach the end of your mind? Can you find the boundaries of your mind? The waves in the mind, they're crashing on a limitless shore. They go on and on, desire after desire after desire. Burning bodies like burning candles. The candle burns according to the stock of wax. And this body burns according to the stock of Prarabdha karma. Karma which is meant to be experienced in this short span of 80 years. Then the soul says, okay, I spent a few of my karmic desires in this body. The wax is finished. The candle goes out. The flame of life in this body withdraws. And the Atma says, bye, goodbye, good night, Hari Bol, Khatam Ho Gaya. And we leave the body to pick up another pile of wax and arrange it in such a way that we say, wow, look at that baby. Hey, look at that guy. He's a real hunk, you know. He's El Macho. And then we cruise around and collect a lot of pratishtha and vishayi, you know, sense gratification, and burn up some more wax of our stored material desires, and we just keep on going like a chain smoker, one cigarette after another. He's smoking one and he lights the other one with the next one. That's called chain. He finishes this one, what's left? He goes like this, a little bit left. And then he throws it away. Makes smoke rings, you know, if he's really cool, if he's really really professional smoker. He sits around and makes smoke rings and he makes designs. One smoke ring interacts with another. Hey, check it out, man. I made the Olympic symbol. I got three interlocking smoke rings. There's one. And watch this. Two. And then, see, that's the Olympics, man. And then one goes up and then another one catches it. So this is how they pass their time in college between classes. Having smoke ring contests. So our bodies are going up in smoke like this. So it's confined, but we talk about infinity, no fine point, no limitation, no confines, no shores, no boundaries. As we say, in love there's no rules, and in rules there's no love. Love is beyond rule. In love you can step on my head, you can scratch me, you can bite me. But in the rule of social decorum, or if you're in a classroom, the teacher can't scratch you and bite you. They'll get arrested, because it goes by rule. But in love, anything's possible. So the domain of infinity is based on the infinite expansion of the principle of love. God loves us unlimitedly, without any bounds. Boundless love, timeless love. We use these phrases in our poetry to entice the finer sentiments of our intellect with the proposals of eternal love. Eternal love. Endless love, boundless love, a love that never dies. You'll always be in my eyes. My heart is with you everywhere, forever and all time. The point is, these are nice. Why? Why do these things rise in our consciousness? Why do these type of phrases enter our common vernacular, our social intercourse and dialogue? Where do they come from? Such beautiful phrases that are catchy and attractive and mollifying and sweet. They emanate from the core of our very being. They originate from the substratum of our existence. The substratum beyond the mind and beyond the body and beyond the intelligence and the discriminative faculty And the rational faculty is the Atma, the Jivatma. Me Jivatma Hung. Punjabi Nehi. American Nehi. Ekdam Maya. Upadihe. Designation. Artificiality. Ugly bar. Bengali. Ye. Abhi Punjabi. Bhavishya Bengali. Bhagavan Jantahun. Bhagavan knows. So this is not the... But the soul is saying, soul is speaking, I want to live eternally. I want to love unlimitedly. I want boundless love. Happiness that never wanes. Ecstasy that expands and newer dimensions and aspects at every moment. I can't find it. I tried with this man, with this woman, with this wife, with this husband, with this birth, with that birth. Endless pursuit of happiness, but no success. Only hope. Hope. Yes. Next time. This time. Now. You. Me. Yes. It'll work. We can make it work. Really? Almost. Guess what? Do you know who I am? My name is Time. And I've come to tell you that it's all over now. Goodbye. My baby. Then death comes and that's the end of your endless love. Your boundless happiness and the perfection of all women and men become a pile of ashes and a shamsan grounds. Shamsan? Crematorium. From dust thou art and dust thou become. Isn't it? Earth. Bodies made of earth, water. Bones are earth. Oceans are water. But the Atma is saying that something tells me that there's more than this body is permitting me to experience. Something is telling me that there's something beyond. There's something within me that's looking for these experiences of eternal happiness and joy. And a relationship. I want sambandha. I want a relationship. I want it with mother, father, friend, wife, conjugal, something. And this is what's really, this is what yoga is all about. But most yoga only takes people to the limits of this material coverings. Because all yoga is manufactured here in the material world. It's coming from working on the bodily platform, mental platform, meditation, dhyan, raja, hatha. Cities. Cities are only working from the material platform. Only something coming from beyond this world can take you beyond this world. If someone comes from another planet, where you don't even know where it is, nor how to get there, and he comes in the proper vehicle, UFO, unidentified flying object, if he comes in some space saucer, or some highly technical, flying machine from another planet, and he says, listen, I know where there's another planet, I know how to get there, and I have the vehicle and yantra machine to take you there. Hop inside, let's go for a ride. You want to go for a ride? Yeah, baby, what a sports car. You have a nice sports car, let's go. So you get inside this spaceship with this very strange-looking fellow, and you go for a ride, zip, and you go to another planet. So you can only get out of this planet and go to that faraway planet by someone who knows. So this is where bhakti is actually, this is the unique quality of bhakti, which gyan, karma, yoga, although they try to relegate the practitioners of these various paths, they try to relegate bhakti to a secondary or an inferior position because they can't understand it. Because from the external observation, bhakti seems rather similar to material life. There's love, There's seva and service. There's relationship. And we have all these things on the bodily platform, love and relationship and exchange of service. I love you and do things for you, and you love me and do things for me. So they misconstrue what is bhakti. This is the biggest misconception in anyone who has the slightest idea of what he thinks it is. Actually, bhakti is entirely, totally transcendental. It does not originate from this world. It is not a phenomenon of this world, and it does not take one anywhere in this world. It is not a vehicle to go anywhere in this world. It will not give you anything in this world. It will not give you siddhis. You want to learn how to hop by TM, you can develop some slight powers of lagima siddhi, to become lighter than the lightest by meditating on cotton. Some yogis and proponents of the system are very popular around the world. They call it hopping and a minor experience of mystic siddhis. When they think it's a great accomplishment, and so, of course it is to some extent, but all they can do is elevate their posterior, which is sometimes called something else, and they can move from this position sitting in the room to 3 feet one way or the other, and that's called astral travel. They're quite overdoing what they're calling it, but it's generally called hopping. And you can even hop by mysticism from a planet to another planet, what to speak of, from one musical chairs, hopping from one chair to another. But you're only hopping from one lily pad to another lily pad in the material pool. You're not really going anywhere out. Bhakti is actually God. God is, in the fullest understanding of God, God is light. God is consciousness. God is power. God is energy. Yeah, he's all those things. I am too. I'm also light. And I'm also power. I'm also energy in a minute expression. But I'm also love, which is a reflection of the real thing. But ultimately, God is, because God, love is light, and love is energy, and love is consciousness, and love is power. Is there any other power greater than love in this entire world? No. Love moves mountains. Forget about mountains. Love moves armies. Love moves people. Love moves countries. Love moves the entire world. One part of the world can attack another part of the world on the basis of misplaced material sentiments and what we call love. Yes, no? No, yes.
Yes.
Yes. Unequivocally, absolutely, undeniably, yes. So we say, oh, God is light. Yes, God is light. God is energy, force, consciousness, power. Yes. Okay, is that as far as you're going to go? Is that as far as your pea brain can extend? You can't conceive of something beyond? That's transcendence, it's spirituality, and divinity means love, means power, consciousness, light, Tej, Brahmajyoti. Yeah, right on, brother. Keep going, don't stop. Age koro. Something like Age koro in Bengali. Yeah, they say go higher, as in Gage something, Age koro. Go higher. I can't go higher. Hey man, God is the force. The force, you have to meditate. You are that energy, you are that light. Divine light mission. Yes, the divine light. Brother, there's a divine light within everyone. And just melt into that light and feel the oneness. You are that light. You're that lighter than... Merge into that light and you feel so much warmth and all-pervadingness, and you're eternally in the light. Ah. That sounds attractive to you? Well, then take it, man. There's lots of light. Jump in it. But not everybody wants to settle for firefly realization. Firefly realization. The firefly sees the light. Oh, check it out, man. Hey, let's merge, man. Okay. You got to work hard. If you want to merge, you gotta eat, you gotta control your diet. You gotta meditate three times a day. You have to do pranayam, reshak, purat, anulam, ilo. And we're getting closer. Divine light. Oh, I feel it all around me. Oh, everywhere's light. I am the light. The light is me. You are the light. We're all light. Yes. Oh, my wings are burning. Oh, it's okay. Don't worry. And a bug gets burned in a 3,000-watt halogen light in the parking lot of the latest multiplex theater. He merged in a divine light. Ah, another successful yogi from our mission. The moth mission. The moth, you know, moth is like butterfly. And so, okay, have it. You want to do this as the Firefly Realization Program. Firefly. Fly as high as your wings can take you and burn off in the halogen. Merge in the halogen light. Brahmajyoti. Brahmasiyujamukti. Brahmakaivalya. Oh, it's so warm. Mm. Ah. It's been a cold winter. It's so bright. I am that light. I am the light. The divine... Oh, brothers, the divine light is within you. Just listen to my words. You must realize that divinity, that you are the divinity. Within all of you is divine light. I have realized. If you follow my system, only $150, you will realize the divine light. Everywhere is light. Everywhere, light, light. But God is Krishna. Oh, this is Krishna. This is for babies, for women. This is women and sentimentalists. You know, please don't bring in these lower conceptions of the higher light. Oh, it's beautiful. If you realize the light is beautiful. Oh, Swamiji, Guruji, can you please describe the divine light of higher consciousness? It's consciousness. It's light. I can't describe it to you. You have to realize it. Oh, Chahal. Oh, $150. Acha. It's a 16,000 lifetime course. I mean, a 16-week course. Yes. No. Here's the meditation. Aing. 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 Listen, are you tuning your sitar? Or are you chanting the Saraswati Bija mantra? What are you trying to do? Either tune your sitar, or chant the Saraswati Bija mantra. Please, you must understand the difference between tuning your sitar and chanting the mantra. Otherwise, how will you realize the divine light? My dear students, I have come to you with a mission. I want to merge all of you into the halogen. Merge into the halogen of God. The embrace of God's light. This light, really, you must understand you're suffering in this world because you don't realize the light of love. Love is the absolute all-pervading. Love is love. Love, love everywhere. Love. Ha. $150. That's just a regular message we have to remind you in the middle of my discourse. Don't be distracted. But love. Yes. Light. Yes. Consciousness. Yes, conscious. What the hell is consciousness anyway? Swamiji keeps using this word, higher consciousness. Well, damn it. What is lower consciousness? And let's understand that and try to go higher. Hey, no questions. Otherwise, you have to pay double. Two times. Double time. So they use very wonderful words. When we say, it's very good. The light is good. The power is good. The conscience, you're all got it right. Now, put that in your back pocket. Come out of the material world and come to the land of bhakti. Because bhakti is the pinnacle of the Everest mountain of self-realization. But bhakti is totally alaukik, totally transcendental. And one will never understand bhakti unless he meets someone from the divine realm. Someone who's transparent. He is living in the divine love of God. He has light, he has consciousness, he has power, he has love, everything he has. Because it all comes from there. Light, this planet does not generate light. It is not a luminous sphere or globe. Light comes from there. This planet does not generate power. The power comes by God's arrangement. Water power comes from God. Air, light, solar power, it all comes from outside, all power sources. No water, no turbine power. Water comes, God takes the ocean water, puts it on the mountains, they come down and make turbine. So we have no power, we have no consciousness. But bhakti comes from outside this universe. It comes from bhakti dham, hari dham. Hari dham, the Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. And the emissaries and representatives of that world, they come in. And the acharya parampara of bhakti. And if one has love for Krishna, Govinda prem, Krishna prem, Bhagavat prem, he has light, he has power, he has consciousness, he has divinity. There's no greater merging than merging in the love of God. It's embrace, prema lingata. And that you merge in God by surrendering, sharanagati, and serving. This is bhakti. Bhakti is something extraordinary. It's nothing to do with bodies, nothing to do with consciousness. These are only the attributes and the lakshan of Shuddha bhakti. They're everyone, all these ideas are getting close, but they're hitting their heads on the ceiling of the universe. They're not getting beyond the coverings of the universe. At best, the greatest yogi in the history of the world can go to Tapaloka. Janaloka, first there's Kanaraloka, Charanaloka, Gandharvaloka. Then there's Swargaloka, then Janaloka, then Maharloka, then Tapaloka, then Satyaloka. And then there's the Paravyom. And then beyond the Paravyom and Karana Samudra, causal ocean, surrounding this whole Maya Jagat, this whole material world, is a layer of consciousness. It's reflected consciousness. This side is material consciousness, and that side is Shuddha Chit, pure consciousness. This consciousness here is mixed with causality, Karan, causality, cause and effect, and everything down below that. But all this, everything goes, this Karam, Yoga, Jnana, it just doesn't go anywhere. It goes Swarga, Jnana, Tapa, that's it, and bus, up to the top and back again. Krishna's telling in Gita, Punarjanma Vidyate. Krishna's telling Arjuna, so you go to Brahmaloka, you go to the top. Punarjanma na vidyate. Punarjanam. Again you take birth. So the only way to get out is by a system that comes from out there, comes in here and takes you there. Like the analogy of the spaceship and the other planetary visitor. So the pure devotee, he's coming from there, the bhakta. He's teaching pure bhakti, not all this chalak dharma and cheating and kapat dharma. It's all cheating. People are being cheated. Love of God, prema, Krishna prema. It's beyond the body, beyond the mind. You can't meditate and get prema. You can't meditate and get the love of God. You can try to understand any projection or mental conception does not touch prema. You cannot understand bhakti or prema with the mind. So it eludes the common man. So the advocates and proponents of various yoga systems and philosophical presentations, They look at bhakti with their external senses and mind, and they say, oh, it's sentimentality. Bhakti is sentimentality for Bengali grandmothers and North Indian widows. It's nothing for an intelligent person. Well, what about me? I'm a fool. MBBS in allopathic medicine, 1973, UCLA graduate. I'm a fool. My father's an Arapati. I'm a fool. And I went to grammar school in Aston Martin. Father had a Porsche, my brother the Jaguar. I'm a fool. So bhakti is something real. It's transcendental. It's the most exhilarating experience of divine ecstasy. And it's this boundless love, love of God. It's full of love and it's full of light and full of consciousness. All these other things are cheating people. They're only taking people, like taking, enlisting a bunch of whole squadrons of fireflies. Let's join together and go and merge in the light. You ready? Here we go. Burning your hair off the edges of your wings, and finally your wings sizzle, and your antlers, antennas sizzle, and your head sizzles, and you're finished, and you leave that body. Melted on the surface of the 3,000-watt halogen bulb. People don't have attachment for the lotus feet of Govinda, Krishna. And they say, this bhakti is sort of sentimentalist. Or Bengali, that guy's sentimental. They don't know anything. I'm IIT, man. And they say, Hare Krishna, what is this stuff? Sentimental. And then they cast that aside and they pursue these other paths of yoga, meditation, yoga. I practiced Raj Yoga for 7 years. One of the best teachers in India, 1967 to 1974. And somehow I met A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and he said some things that took me beyond yoga. Yoga means to connect, to join. So yoga connects the Atma through various processes. The Atma can be moved to merge in the higher levels of consciousness by meditation, by physical manipulation of the Susumna Nadi and the Kundalini. All these things are probably heard, all these things. We were dealt working with these various physical approaches, and my Guruji said some interesting points he was saying. He said that these are wonderful achievements and amazing feats that are valid and real and wonderful, but they're all within the material world, my dear friend. And if you really want to go to the spiritual world and stay there, the only way you can go there is by bhakti. So then I said, well, what is bhakti? And he said, well, I'll teach you. And he taught me, but then it's still, that's not enough. It's like a school where you go to and you don't know if you're going to get a degree or not. I went to medical school, I mean undergraduate in medical school, and I had the idea that if I stay here long enough and I slug it out hard enough, and I take enough exams and get enough grades that I'll get a degree. But my Gurudev, he said something very nice. He said, you have to give everything to Krishna and try your best and wait and see. I said, well, what kind of university is that? I give my everything and try my best and wait and see whether the dean of admissions or school... He says, you've been here for 5 years. Stay another six and think about it. Maybe after six I'll give you a degree. Or maybe seven or eight or whatever. Anyway, just keep trying. So he said like that. I said, whoa, this is a very interesting thing, because I can't control it. I can't control the result of my endeavor. So I don't like the sound of this. proposal that I want to be the controller. I am God after all. And I want to control my life and get the result that I want. You're telling me that you'll teach me a system of bhakti which comes from outside this world and will take you to the eternal land of love and beauty and divine play in a loving relationship with Krishna, which is the most intimate, sweet form of Godhead, and so many other things, of course, he taught. But then he said that, I said, well, what's the chances of my getting there? And he said, I can't really tell you that. That's up to Krishna, because it's his ball game. If he wants you to dance, he'll call you. And if he wants your love, if your love is good enough and pure enough and transparent enough and selfless enough, and it's of the quality that fits in his domain. In other words, he's the center, and he's the controller, and he'll decide who graduates and who doesn't, and who gets in and who doesn't. If you're ready for that proposal to be totally out of control, you can't control the result, you can just serve him. And of course, he's not a blind master. He's not an insentient employer. You will see in so many wonderful and beautiful ways how Krishna will reciprocate with even your littlest endeavor to love him and serve him and come to him. And the rest is kripa, Bhagavan kripa. And of course, Guruji, his humility, he didn't say, and also Guru kripa, which is all too well known in India, Guru kripa hi kevalam. It is only by Guru kripa, but his humility was such that that was not mentioned. And he said that if God is merciful, then he will take you there. It's up to him. It's not up to us. So I was a little nervous about the proposal of bhakti yoga because it seemed like an open-ended thing that didn't have any end point and didn't have any guarantee of success. And there was no money back on the, there was nothing written on the fine print. You get your money back, nor do you get your time back, your investment. You don't even get your life back because you may cast your whole life at the feet of Bhagavan, and he may not even look your way. So I was a little bit nervous about the enrolling in this school of unpredictability. This is definitely not a school of technology and not a school of business management. This was a school of unpredictability, which is, of course, not very attractive. It's something that's unpredictable. But nevertheless, he said something that was very consoling and comforting. He said, but listen. Are you listening, my dear friends and inquisitive onlookers? Some doubt may be remaining in your mind, and it should be if you have half a brain. And if it doesn't remain, then you're not alive. Because as long as you are alive, you can mark my words today, doubts will never leave you. Doubts will never leave any man or woman in this world until they see Krishna. And then still you may think, who are you? Are you from Bollywood? Have you put some blue polish on your brown skin or your golden white Punjabi skin? Have you perchance put some blue dye? I once bought a sapphire and they dyed it blue and cheated me. Told me it was a blue sapphire when it was a pink one from Lanka. So have you dyed your skin for the role of Krishna in the Krishna movie? And you're now standing before me? And Krishna said, no, I haven't dyed my skin. But I have colored your heart with love. So now you can see me as I am. That love is called rag. Rag. Rag means color. It means attachment. It means love. Anurag. And it is only with this love that one can see God as He is. So you even may have some doubt when you see God. But what did Guruji say to encourage us to enroll in the school of unpredictability? What did he say? He said, Srila Prabhupada, that is, Srila Prabhupada, he said, if you take one step toward Krishna, the sweet Lord of play, Lila Purushottam, to put it in technical terms, the sweet Lord of play, if you take one step toward Him, then He will take 10 steps toward you, which means me, because He was speaking to me. So when I heard that, I thought, well, this is something predictable. Because I know whether or not I will take one step or not. Because I have that much control over my steps, because I'm not a baby anymore, and I don't fall on my bum bum. And I can take one step forward after another. So now the next point is choose. Freedom of choice. The free will. Will I or will I not? Will I take a step toward Krishna or will I say, no, thank you, and go another way to another proposal? So it took me about a year after that. That was 74. And then year of reading, study, introspection, meeting with my own particular guru of my other pursuit, and talking to my assorted friends and accomplices, and a lot of long walks on the Santa Monica Beach. I lived in Santa Monica, and I was going to school in L.A. and Westwood, actually. And I lived on the beach. I mean, not exactly on the beach, but I mean, I had a house. I took a lot of long walks late at night and did a lot of thinking and a lot of oming also. I was doing a lot of oming. And while I was roaming, I was doing oming. I was roaming on the beach and watching the plankton dance in the waves. And the plankton are phosphorescent aquatic creatures who light up their tails or something and dance in the waves and in the summer, and they create sparkles of light in the water, which is called plankton. If you know anything about biology, what do they call it? Sea biology, whatever it is. So they look very interesting, to little sparkles of light. You've seen?
Yes.
Go to the Caribbean or something. So I would see those, and long walks from Santa Monica down to Venice, sometimes walked as far as Manhattan Beach, and 10 kilometers, I mean long. And I was chanting Om, because I was introduced to that mantra and some other beach mantras, which I can't tell you because they're secret. But if you pay me $150, I will tell you those secret mantras. Because this is part of the initiation, that you receive it with the promise that you also charge $150 and send 10% to the guru that gave it to you, the commission agent. No, I'm making a joke. But so I was chanting Om, and I was on the roam, and I was chanting Om, and I went far from my home. But soon I returned, and all the time I was chanting Om. Om that way, and Om this way, and Om all the way home. But having experienced both, I prefer the Hare Krishna mantra. It's certainly a lot more different tunes and ragas you can sing, and it has a deeper effect. Because Om, actually, you know, Om is like the creative element. When the murli of Krishna emanates from the Rasastali on the banks of the Yamuna, that Murali Manohar, that beautiful and dulcet Murali that Krishna plays, and it enervates every loving cell of the damsels of Braja, and they begin to whirl and spin in beautiful patterns, almost like the movements of the neutrons and protons around the atom. So Krishna is that central atom, and all the gopis are like neutrons and protons, and he's playing his flute is like the atomic winds. If you've studied anything of atomic, physics and stuff, down there at the atomic level, there's a lot of dancing going on, and people don't know whether those particles are, whether they're solid particles or whether they're moving in waves, and so they they developed a very interesting scientific formula to describe the atomic phenomenon, which is observed through the cyclotron, and they come up with a very, very sound proposal that said actually what's going on there is what we call the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It is highly uncertain what the hell is going on down there. And we examine some particle that looks like it's solid, but since it's moving faster than the speed of light, by the time we take a picture of it, it's already moved from point A to point B, and it's left a lot of, smoke and, So these down there at atomic level, one atom is like laying rubber, and it starts off as a solid particle. I remember I was studying physics, and then they said, of course that was 40 years ago, I don't know what the hell they say now, they always change all the time. But that's why it's called uncertainty principle. Today's fact is tomorrow's fantasy. This is the basic scientific, modern science. Today's, it's a scientific fact. Then the students are saying, you mean fantasy? Fantasy means like chamatkar, fantasy, how do you say in Hindi, what do you say, fantasy? Imagination type of thing, Fantasy means like you imagine something. It's a fantasy. Oh, I imagine I was a king in his big palace, and it's like a fantasy. So they change. So they don't know whether it's a solid particle or solid piece of matter, or whether it's a moving. It's a wave. It's a vibration. It's moving. So then, actually, it's not a wave. It's not a particle. We have decided that it must be a wavicle. It's a wavicle. A wave and a particle. It's something of a particle and something of a wave. So you merge the two together. It's like a Sanskrit sandhi, merging of two words, and becomes a wavicle. So in other words, we don't know what's going on down there. So in the same way, Krishna's playing his flute, right? Don't get lose track here and get too atomic. But Krishna's playing his flute, and then he's going like this and like that, and the gopis are going, and they're just spinning around in different circles. And Lasya, there's Halikya Nach, and Lasya Nach, and Tandava Nach, Tandava Nitya. And there's different ladies' dancers and male dancers. There's a variety, and there's Chakra Brahmana Nach. Five or six different types of dances they do in the Ras Mandal. In the Maharas dance, Krishna and the gopis, different combinations. Krishna alone, Krishna with Radharani, Krishna with all the gopis, many Krishnas and many gopis, just circles of gopis growing around Radha and Krishna. It's a huge dance. And that's where it all starts. That's where all the movement, it's all circular. And what is it? And it all starts with love. The initial vibration is love and Krishna's flute. And then it comes out and emanates from the Bhakti Dham. Bhakti Dham, Hari Dham, Krishna Dham, Goloka Dham, Raja Gokul. And that flute vibration travels over eons and eons of space, light, thousands and millions of light years, from the center of the spiritual world all the way across the Paravyom. Then it enters through the concentric shells covering this universe of ego and buddhi and man, hankar, earth, water, fire, air, ether. And then that flute transforms by vikar and becomes om. Because ah, u, and m. This is all the vowels. Ah and u, that contains all the vowels. Sa, re, ga, pa, ma, like this. And m, that is a consonant. That includes ka and ga, m. It's all included in m. So all the possibilities of sound, shabda, all the possibilities are contained within that flute becomes Om, then Om enters this universe and expands into all the forms of sound that we hear in this universe, from A to M. A-O-M, Om. And everyone speaks like that. They say, ah, ah, ah. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Akshara. Akshara, among the letters or akshara, syllables, I am A, ah. A is the foundation of all sound. Ah, all sound is based on this ah. Communication, sound, language, bhasha, etc. Music, ah. Sa gre ga re ma pa da di sa. Ah. So that's Om. Confirmed. very positive confirmation. So Om is very nice. So Om. Om takes you anywhere around this material world. Om will take you there. Om is the creative sound, the seed sound. The Bible says, in the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. That's Om. But the Om is the vikar, the murli of Krishna, or the flute. So Om, it just gives you all kinds of consciousness, gives you light, gives you power, gives you, in Brahma Sayuja, Brahma, Nirvikalpa Brahma. But you have to go beyond Om to the sound of Krishna's flute. If you do meditation, it's called the Anahata, Anahata Shabda. Anahata Shabda means the seven vibrations, the seven sounds vibrating within the core of the heart. And there's different techniques you do to try to get silence. Close your eyes, nose, and ears like this. There's different mudras to keep all external sounds out. Or you go in quiet rooms, you go in caves and try to see, you can't hear firecrackers and bombs and airplanes and all microwaves and cell phones and dinka chinka chinka bing bing ding ding, hello. And then you can listen to the sounds in the heart. And what are those Anahata sounds? You can read in Yoga and the Patanjali Yoga Sutras and all these things. And you can read in there. And it tells about the sounds. It's very interesting. And you go deeper and deeper, you hear the sound of kettle drums. You hear the sound of bells, ganta, drums. This is interesting. This is in total silent room, nothing. And it's not your mind. It's not you're a musician or you're coming from a Devi temple full of bells. It's not a sanskara. It's not a recollection of a stored sanskara in the chitta. This is the Anahata sound. In the core of the heart. This is all yoga things, you know? And in a totally silent place, then you'll hear drums, you'll hear bells, you'll hear a veena, you'll hear buzzing of bees, zzz, like, you know, bees, like, you know, madukar, or shahadwala. Zzz, and then you'll hear the meg, the rumbling of clouds, boom, 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 like this, which is like, that's, they sometimes they say meg or they say dundubi. Dundubi means kettle drum, very deep sound, boom, 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 deep drum. Then finally, the final sound you hear is flute. That's very interesting. So even yogis are going for Brahman. They will, when they do the meditation, as they go deeper through their meditation with Om, because Om will go through all these vibrations, all these possible sounds, from bells and to low sounds, to high sounds, to consonants, to vowels, and finally ends with flute. This is very interesting. Anyway, this is a long discussion. But it all begins with Krishna and Radha playing. Krishna's playing the flute and Radha's dancing. That's the source of all movement. It's the source of all sound. It's the source of all life. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. She's the original Vadu. She's the original Shakti consort Vadu. Vadu means new, tender, new, charming, sweet, lovable bride or wife, Vadu. And Vidya is Krishna, the origin of all knowledge, God, Chit, Samvit. And then Vadu is Ladini or Shakti. Or pleasure, love, and then life. This is Vidya Vadu Jivanam. So this is a rather extended explanation of the phrase Vidya Vadu Jivanam.